Well, well, we certainly don't need any more trouble, that's for sure. That's Bob Marley and the Wailers with No More Trouble. It's from their 1973 album, Catch a Fire. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Tuesday, December the 23rd. And as funeral arrangements are announced for Rafael Ramos, one of two NYPD officers gunned down by Ismael Brinsley in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn 3 days ago, Mayor Bill de Blasio and other elected officials are calling for a temporary halt to justice demonstrations and rancorous finger-pointing over who is to blame for the officers' deaths. But activist groups say they won't be stopping the demonstrations. Meanwhile, Ramos's family will be holding a viewing service on Friday at 7 p.m. at Christ Tabernacle Church in Glendale, Queens, with a funeral service on Saturday at the same church and burial at Cypress Hills Cemetery in Brooklyn. Funeral arrangements for his partner will be announced later. The family is coordinating the arrival of relatives from China. We discussed yesterday with our guest, Michael Grays, co-founder of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care, how the killings of these officers have ignited multiple firestorms. And our guest today is is in a meeting at the moment and cannot be with us, but we will proceed with the second half of our program. And the second half of our program has to do with the language of coverage, how coverage has of this case is made to affect the way we think about things. And you know, we do this all the time on Lead Stories. Media literacy is very, very important. It means that you are a conscious consumer of information. You're not just wide open to everything said, including on this program, without close scrutiny. You subject everything to close scrutiny, and then you see what makes sense and what does not make sense. You become quite defensive in the choice of information and what you choose to put into your reservoir of information. What we're going to do now is take a look, take a listen in this sense, of a news conference. This was a news briefing that was done yesterday. The mayor and the police commissioner, William Bratton, held what they called a media availability to give the media, the people who in turn will fashion news stories that you and I will consume, and they shared particular information about the case, updating the reporter pool as to what was going on. What I want you to do is listen very carefully, and we will discuss the short clip. It's a couple of minutes. It's about 5 or 6 minutes, and we will come back to the discussion to see what it is you have gleaned from this briefing, and we will talk about it. Here are Mayor, well, we'll start off, I think, in this clip, we'll start off with a with the chief of detectives, Mr. Boyce, and then we will have the chief of detectives for Brooklyn, Mr. Connery, and we will hear from the police commissioner himself, William Bratton.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd just at this point like to thank not only Brooklyn detectives, but also members of the Special Investigations Unit and the Detective Bureau for assisting, and as well as our, the Intelligence Bureau. has been helping us out quite a bit with outside agencies as well. We are in touch with FBI, ATF, and other police departments around the country to kind of tap down on this individual, where his whereabouts are, and where, what he's been doing the last couple of weeks. As I said yesterday, he had tried to commit suicide about a year ago. We got that from family members. We're still delving in on that. What we're seeing in our social media investigation, basically on Instagram, he put out 119 images on his Instagram account. A lot of these things are self-despair, but they're also anti-government. He goes in on November 25th of this year on an anti-government tirade, and he's called for a new challenge, BTF, which is burn the flag, in which he goes on quite extensively on his Instagram account about America and its inequities, quite a bit. He talks about Mike Brown and Trayvon Martin. As I said, we have recovered his cell phone from Baltimore, and is over several thousand images on it, and we're tearing down on that as well. One of the cell phone images that we have is a video of Union Square Park, where he is a spectator watching one of the protests. We date that at around December 1st. Again, he's just a spectator, it seems, as people walking by. He's recording it on his cell phone. We found that down in Baltimore where he left it. A couple other things about him. His computer crime squad is also working very hard to come up with a profile or an image of this individual, and it's quite scary. He doesn't talk about guns a lot. We spoke with his ex-girlfriend, the lady he shot, and very courageous young woman. He put the gun to his own head when he broke into her apartment, and then she talked him out of that, and he later shot her before he left. So that's where we're going with that. She said she'd never seen him with a gun before that instance. So we're looking forward to identify that one piece of time where he was in Brooklyn from about 12:07 hours to the time of occurrence, 14:47 hours. What you see over here is some images. We have a tape of Atlantic Center Mall, where he is, where he's walking around. And if I could play that tape. We're asking the public's assistance if they've seen him, because right now we don't know where he was for 2 hours. And as you can see, he's walking around there. He has a bag in his hand. He's had that bag in his hand for most of the day. We have him with that bag over in by the crime scene as well. We believe the gun was in that bag at that point. That's what we're thinking right now. It's a styrofoam container within that white bag, and that's what we're thinking right now. We pulled it out when he did the shooting. Again, public help for us. If we can identify where he was, that jacket is quite distinctive. The Indian sign on it, you'll see it, and he's wearing something. Very distinctive shoes as well. We found another Instagram message from that morning, again, threatening to kill the police. So we have a very disturbed young man here. Pat, you want to just want
to? Yeah, I'll just, good afternoon. I'll reiterate what Chief Boyce has already said. We're seeking the community's assistance with this very important investigation. We've been able to establish the whereabouts of Ismael Brimsley from the early morning hours of Saturday the 20th when he's in Maryland, through his travel up to New York from Manhattan and indeed into Brooklyn. What we do have is a gap in his movements for about 2 hours and 30 minutes. Between 12 o'clock and 2:30 p.m. when we believe he's in the Fort Greene section of Brooklyn, Fort Greene or Bed-Stuy. He's last seen in the Atlantic Terminal Mall at around 12 o'clock. We're seeking the public's assistance. If anyone has seen this individual Saturday the 20th between 12 o'clock and 2:30 p.m., we urge you to call our Crime Stoppers hotline, 1-800-577-TIPS. The male is a male, black, 6'1", approximately 235 pounds. He was wearing the clothing you see over here that Chief Boyce describes. Particularly, I'd like you to focus on that patch with the Indian arrowhead in red and white. Very distinctive. If anyone saw that male on Saturday the 20th during those hours in Bed-Stuy or Fort Greene, we urge you to call our Crime Stoppers hotline. Thank you.
Just to reiterate, people are stepping forward who do know him, who are painting the same picture where we already know that he's a very troubled man and that he was at rage with police officers. That seems to be the issue, anti-government, anti-police, and that's what we're going forward. So I would urge everybody with any information on this man to step forward now. Thank you.
investigation that we have conducted so far leads us to believe that he acted alone. Early on, there was concern that was he, in fact, a lone player. Nothing in the investigation up to this point would lead us to believe that he was anything but a solo operator, if you will. And we did enhance our security, the security that already...
All right. So we had this briefing yesterday, and we heard from Robert Boyce. He is the New York Police Department's chief of detectives. We heard from Pat Connery, who is the chief of detectives in Brooklyn. And we heard from Commissioner William Bratton, all describing or informing this media pool about the an update on Ismail Brinsley, the alleged gunman who shot and killed two police officers on Saturday. All right. Now, you are... Here's the task. You've listened to this. What has struck you about this information? What is particularly striking about this information? I'm not going to give you any further hints. You are seasoned enough to be discerning and discriminating. You would know what constitutes a really important story. We've just heard from just that information, and this is the basis on which a lot of the reports are going to be generated in the media, and it will be on the news, it will be the following day's newspapers and so forth, it will be on wire services. But to your mind, what is the most significant thing that came across in just that short clip that we played of a little bit more than 5 minutes? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is your call. I should mention that our guest, Tony Miranda, the executive chairman of the Latino Officers Association, was to be with us. He has been called away to an emergency meeting and will not be able to make it with us. I hope he can before the program ends, but if not, we will reschedule him. That is not a problem. These things happen, and the situation being as fluid as it is, this is what has happened. And so I know that he would be very upset to not be here, but he has greater issues because, as you know, one of the officers involved, Rafael Ramos, who was killed, the other one, Jian Liu, one of the officers is a member of his organization, and there may be developments that we will hear about later when we talk with him, that may not be today. But let us concentrate on the other half, which will now be the whole program. What did you hear in that small clip that was played that is of particular significance to you? From Dallas, Sarah, you start out. Thank you.
Oh, greetings to you, Utrice, and the PRN audience.
Thank you. What did you hear?
Okay, Utrice. What I heard is they're trying to tie this situation in with these cops into the Brown and the Garner situation. They're trying to basically merge the situation together that this man had some kind of grudge against cops. First of all, they said he's anti-government, anti-police. And then, of course, with everything else, with the Garner and the Brown situation, they're trying to bring the two in together.
How could you just stay with this point and tell me how you arrived at that conclusion? What in the conference led you to that conclusion?
Because first of all, they said that his girlfriend said that he never had a gun, but he kicked in her door. He showed up there with a gun, tried to commit suicide to himself, and then in turn he turned around and pointed the weapon at her and shot her. To me, that doesn't make any sense, Utrice. It doesn't make any It makes absolutely no sense that if I'm going to be killing myself, I want to hurt myself in such a way that I'm going to turn around, you know, instead of shooting me in the apartment of my husband, girlfriend, whatever, I'm going to turn around and shoot her and then walk out of the apartment, get on a bus or whatever it was that he traveled on to get to New York. And then,
I just want you to concentrate on the point that you initially made. I think you gave us an explanation. It is a very good point that you made, but you missed the mark today, Sarah.
Yes,
you missed the mark.
Yes, I wasn't expecting to be the first one on, but I...
You thought you would borrow from other people, is that it? Okay.
Yes, because it was going to jog my memory, but okay, I guess I'll open up the way for others.
Your point is well taken, very much so.
Thank you.
But we're looking for the significance. There's a very powerful, you know what, I'll give you a clue. I can't say that you missed the mark entirely, but I don't want to give anybody else any hints, you see? So I can't define from what you said. I can't give any clues based on what you said. Thank you so much for calling today and getting us started. From Brooklyn, Ethan, what is the most significant thing that came out of that news conference?
Good afternoon, Sister Yatrice.
Thank you, Ethan.
The first thing that comes to my mind is it sounds like they're still looking for the person. Because even when I heard some of this on Saturday or whenever it was, the way they're saying, if you've seen this, if you know where this is, we're looking for this type of person, I'm like, you're speaking as if we should still be looking for someone. Because at first, when I first heard it, I thought he killed himself. But when I heard them make that announcement, if you just jump in the middle of the sentence, it sounds like the person's still alive and about somewhere. So that's the first. There's something about the way they're presenting this thing that sounds like they're still looking for someone. But yet we know that this person's already, you know, met their demise. The other piece that stuck out to me was...
Just give us one. And you gave us a strong one. However, if you had listened to Michael Graves the day before, he talked about the fact that one of the things that the police will be doing is accounting to the best of their ability for every single second of this man's life leading up to the tragic event. And by doing so, they will try to decide what kind of links, if any, he had to anything else or anyone else. So this was part, Michael Graves told us this was going to happen. All right, but you got us a little bit further today. Thank you so much for that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Phil from Brooklyn, let's see
Hello.
If you get the prize.
Okay. What struck me was the level, the amount of surveillance assets that they have at their disposal.
Mm-hmm.
To track not only the guy's whereabouts to the point where they can't account for like 2 hours and then this other person that they're looking for.
Now, what is significant about that?
To me, it ties into the whole notion of the surveillance state, but their ability to use these things in somewhat, not say real time, but that they have like all of this capability at their disposal.
Okay, that's a very solid point. I want you to now take that one step further. How does this fit in, let's say, with the Ferguson case and with the Staten Island case of Michael Brown and Eric Garner?
Oh, well, what that would mean is that they also have surveillance information for each of these incidents that they're not sharing with the public.
Okay. Phil, you win a star today.
Thank you.
You win a star today. That's one of that's one of two very glaring things that came out of here. And you are absolutely right. This information news conference lays bare the ability of the state to quantify literally every second of your life. And here we see it being played out in minute and minute by minute detail, but we couldn't find it existing in Ferguson with Darren Wilson, the officer who shot and killed Michael Brown, nor did we find any evidence of such minute, minute-by-minute detail of the chokehold death of Eric Garner. Therefore, what does this lead you to conclude, Phil?
In typical form, they're not going to provide information that's going to go against whatever narrative they want to put out. And the other thing that I was just thinking about was that I kind of forgot that point. But that's all I got.
Well, that was great. A very good, offering today, and you get a star. You're great.
Thank you so much
for that. But it's one of several other pieces that should have occurred to you as extremely significant about that little bit of information that we got today. Lamont from New York, what is your observation?
How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Good afternoon. This is Lamont from New York. I am actually enjoying the phone call conversation. I had predicted some type of energy led me to believe that you will have an instant review of not only the media and the law enforcement's interpretation of the events, forthwith. I was eagerly anticipating it because you had Michael Graves, 100 Black Men in Law Enforcement, on yesterday. And, of course,
yes.
you and him took the lion's share of the time, which, of course, is apropos. However, we're dealing with media psycho-ops. And media psycho-ops is whoever is in control of the information delineates it and gives it to the public or the media at large, who are already malnourished, who are already deprived of information, and who already have misinformation on the brain. Many cases have come to the forefront where police have murdered innocent men, women, and you don't have as much information within hours, as this case is. This is a deliberate attempt to control the media, control the spin.
Lamont, I have to ask you to just direct your attention to where it is we're going today.
The way we're going today is this, if I can just clarify, because I'm not into conjecture or hyperbole or any type of talk about high platitudes. You have the chief of police come out with the mayor, lockstep in barrel in a media conference about two slain officers within hours. The Facebook and Instagram of 119 images of what this person who allegedly shot these police officers was easily data mined. Once again, easily data mined. How is that so? That's the question of the day. The people or the government
out. This is my program, and I'm running it. The question that I asked for today is, we just heard something. There's something very significant that happened there. I appreciate everything you're saying because we have said these things. These are part of the continuing conversation on this program. We're looking at a specific event and trying to analyze the significance of that specific event, and we're trying to extract from it what we ought to pay attention to. Now, if you would like to contribute in that fashion, you would be most welcome. But we don't want to deviate from what our plan is for the program today.
Very articulated very well, but once again, you made it clearly pay attention to what the media information was given. And I just I just gave you the details of what the media conference, the press conference, has provided for the press and also for the public.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that. Ali from New York, you're on the air. What was of significance to
you
in that short clip that we heard?
Okay. I didn't hear the whole clip, but I will tell you that I heard the first part. The first part is that the NSA is doing their work because he was picked. Listen, on December, he was picked for one of those actions that we had at Union Square. So that means that they are looking at every second that we are out there protesting at each one of us. That's what I got. I also will say that they're making connection right now to all the people who helped him from after he shot the girlfriend to New York. They wanted to find out who drove him into the city and what connection he has with any group. And they're looking for a connection.
Supposedly he came by bus to New York.
Yes, but they're looking at connection because they think that he was helped. And if she said that he never had a gun, who provided him with a gun? That is one. And I believe that they're gonna try to pin some people down, especially in New York. That's why they're looking. That's why the media is doing all the work with this propaganda before they even come out with that information, with the right information about him. Because when she went to the police department, how come, if they have all the information about us, how come they want to alert to hold him before he shot those cops? It's almost like they were sacrificing some people in order to stop us from doing what we're doing right now in New York City.
Thank you very much for your call, Ali. We're looking for the significance. There's something very powerful that came through here, and I'm looking to see whether you spotted it. We did get one part of the answer. We got the idea from Phil of Brooklyn. We got one part of the answer. There was one other major thing. They said it over and over again, and yet we did not pick up on it. How come? Carl from Atlanta, did you pick up on it?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Fine,
great,
thank you.
Show. You're welcome. To me, what I abstracted, anti-government, and if you're anti-government, you're going to be put under a microscopic lens, and you will be monitored consistently.
All right. Let us go with what is the significance of that in the context of what was said. I don't want you to interpret. I want you to say exactly what they said that made this point very significant to you.
Well, anti-government could be not only individually but collectively. It could be PRN, it could be RT.com, it could be any organization, alternative medium, if you will, that exposes the truth in whatever context is in relationship to what the government is propaganda that they're trying to push. If you challenge that, or if you are able to critically, if you critique that, then they are monitoring you and they see you as a threat.
Right. We got
you
that,
though. You are a danger.
But we got that already. We got all of those points that you just said. We got that. I'm looking for what was not said. And I'm hoping Atlanta was going to come through for us here, Carl. Come on, the whole city is resting on you now. What was so significant? It was so glaring.
Well, we know, since they can basically they have his every move almost.
Yes, we said that already, so you don't get points. It's already said. All right. So you sound like you're giving up there, but you know what? You made a valiant try, and I got to respect that. Thank you so much, Scott. And call again, always call again. All right? Thank you. From New Jersey, DB, what was so significant about what was said? Let's see if you have the answer. Does New Jersey have it?
The only thing that I can think of at the moment is that there was no mention of a warrant required to access any of this information that they gathered from this perpetrator. No court proceeding or judge involved to issue warrants to access accounts or going to his house or to gather any information on this individual.
All right. Well, thank you. But I'm afraid that doesn't hit the mark. We're looking for it was said so many times. I can't imagine that I have to work this hard to get the answer out of you. Benny.
There was a mention about him being a disturbed individual that I heard a couple of times during that conference. But is that it?
Nope.
Oh.
Thank you so much. It is the elusive answer today. Benny, you're on the air.
Hey.
Benny, where are you calling from?
From the Bronx.
Okay, Benny from the Bronx. What was the most significant thing that we heard here today?
Well, what was not said was his affiliations or any pretense or what the police are pretense for them looking for associates. So who was he? They imply that he was associated with someone who seemed to activate him to do this slaying and within that 2.5 hour period.
All right. Well, thank you, but that's not it. That's not it. Ed from Louisiana, or from Los Angeles, sorry.
Hi. I'm a little behind on this story because I've been dealing with a family crisis, but from what I've heard and what I've gathered is, and I'll take a stab at this, but this is kind of what outrages me. Maybe I'm reacting with emotion, that police officers' lives are more valuable than citizens' lives. And I don't want to separate the two, or I don't want to take anything away from what police have to do. But from the context of this whole thing, it seems to me that you're looking at a situation here where we have to have a lot more respect for people in authority than we do for those who've been gunned down by the police.
All right, Ed,
how come the officers?
You're editorializing.
I don't know their history,
and it's perfectly
but they
fine
went to, great
to
length.
Editorialize. The question that we're dealing with, the exercise question today, is: we heard something. What did we hear? We will come back to this again. This is not the final discussion on this case. We will come back to the editorial part of it. I'm interested in a news conference was held. Things were said. What was the most significant thing that we heard? Thank you so much. Queens, Luis, you're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Yes, it's Luis.
Oh, Luis. Okay, Luis.
Yeah, Luis.
Sorry.
Just a quick thing. I believe they kept saying he's anti-government, anti-police. Does that mean that the police or the government in a police state, if you're anti-police, then that means you're anti-government and vice versa?
Well, I'm asking you the question. You're answering my question with a question.
Okay. Well, I think they're trying to say that the police is the government. And
all right.
Against the police.
Louis, you're close.
Okay.
You're close. Close. You're the closest anybody has gotten so far, but it's not quite there. Chris from Queens.
Therese, I mean, what stood out to me was basically you're a disturbed person if you are against the government and are against policing. It just seemed like there's no room to have any other thought. And to me, it just seems like a Manchurian candidate type of situation. It's just so bizarre, and as another caller had said, it's almost like they're still looking for this person.
Here's what we're going to do. We'll combine Lewis's response and Chris's response as the answer. So Queens wins today. Queens wins. That's it. And I'll explain why. You heard several times in this news conference, they started out by talking about the fact that this young man is a very disturbed person. All these things that were so wrong with him mentally, they kept stressing this over and over. And at the same time, they're saying that he was anti-government, anti-police. Now, this is very, very significant. And the stories that should come out of this should be about, were we looking here, or are we looking here at Ismail Brinsley as a mentally disturbed person? Is this a case of a mentally disturbed person doing something completely irrational within the context of mental illness? Or are we looking at a depraved, born, DNA-encoded killer who hates cops? So you see, this is what is fascinating. At the same time, and they all said it, they all said it. At one form or another, they all said, this person, Ismail Brinsley, basically he was out of his mind. The chief of detectives says, it's hard to come up with a profile, but it's very scary. It's a very scary profile. He talks about references to self-despair, but he's also anti-government. So in the eyes of the police, they're not dealing, the question of mental illness is completely outside of this whole thing here. There is no chance, according to the news conference and according to all of these authorities, the investigative authorities, there is no chance at all that what we saw or what had happened here was a case of a mentally ill person out of control committing, no question, a very heinous act. But it was a mentally disturbed person. A mentally ill person. And they actually enumerated what they were able to confirm as what we will consider to be well within the parameters of mental illness. He barged in on his ex-girlfriend's apartment. He put a gun to his head. She talked him out of it. He shot her. Then he comes to New York and he is doing things his family had said. They said they talked to the family. This young man, by all accounts, had been showing over a period of time all the characteristics of somebody who is mentally off, mentally unstable, mentally ill. But in the same narrative, where they are validating his mental illness, the police are saying what weighs more against him is his anti-government views and his anti-police sentiments. That is phenomenal. They're saying it in front of you. Yes, this is a mentally ill person, but that doesn't matter. He's a criminal. Because he's killed the cops. So we dismiss any notion at all, any scientific basis, any logical basis for saying that perhaps a major role here in this awful, awful tragedy is mental illness. We set that aside. Because in between the mental illness episodes, the main thing is that he was anti-police and he was anti-government. That weighs more. So we don't see this man as an emotionally disturbed person. That's the story. And why is that important? It is important because it literally gives us a view of how the mindset is shaping the not only the investigation of this case, but the shaping of public opinion about it. We are to have zero sympathy. We are to have give no credence to anything else other than the fact that Ismail Brinsley was just a natural-born killer. And yet they themselves, in this particular briefing and in the briefing the previous day, they went at length to tell us all the things that they had validated about Ismail Brinsley that suggest that for a long period of time, he was mentally ill and out of control, to the point where his mother was afraid of him, the family was estranged from him, his friends and acquaintances recall a person who on one hand was affable and funny, but also the record shows he had so many run-ins with the law, he was a violent person, and he exhibited odd behavior. After he shot his girlfriend, he kept calling her mother to apologize and to find hope, you know, to express wishes that she would be okay. Everything that the police themselves have validated so far about this young man suggests that they are also aware of a long history of mental illness. And why would that not be given credence here in the way it would any other person, if it were not a person of color, if he were not an African-American young man? This would be a major factor in the discussion of his actions. But he's an African-American young man, and I'm not... Trust me, you know, I want to make it clear. This is not to excuse anything that he did. Not at all. This was a horrific act. But we still see at the official levels, the highest levels, that are supposed to have gone through all of these. We had William Bratton, the man who Mr. Broken Windows, that if you don't pay attention to the small things, they mushroom into huge things that become uncontrollable. Here is a very important example right in front of his eyes. The mental illness that had been manifesting itself all these years in this young man, being essentially ignored, mushroomed into this catastrophic event because it wasn't taken care of. He did not get the kind of help he needed to bring him out of his instability. But the system will never, ever put that into the whole range of factors that could possibly have come into play in this horrific conclusion in which he even takes his own life, allegedly. That's the story. And it is said in front of you in two consecutive briefings. They have delineated chapter and verse of what they know of this young man's mental problems, mental issues. They have validated it. They corroborated it. They have authenticated all these things. And yet, it is more important they're telling the public, forget all of that. What's important is he expressed anti-government sentiments. He had a thing on his website that said, burn the flag. He talked disparagingly about cops. And that is the reason that he is to be condemned. Not his mental illness, but his statements. And we, as the public, should dutifully understand that this guy was a natural-born criminal and killer. No sympathy for him whatsoever. And it is not important, the issue of mental illness. But yet, what do we know? In police killings, many of the times, mental illness is an issue. Both ways. More than half of the people who are killed by police have mental illness issues. That's a fact. And many of the people who do end up killing police themselves have mental issues. But for some reason, when it comes to this category of crime, the whole issue of mental illness and its possible effect and impact and cause, if even, of a horrible situation like this will never, ever be raised as legitimate, as worthy of consideration as to what eventually happened. And yet we see that they know it, they understand it, they themselves have authenticated it, they themselves have explained it, and they themselves accept it, that this young man had huge mental issues. They said he was a very troubled man. And this is the head of detectives. This is the police commissioner. He was a very troubled man, but anti-government and anti-police. So when you have the two variants in play, being very troubled or being anti-government or anti-police, being very troubled is out of the picture. You're just anti-government and anti-police. See? Now, that was played out in front of you. And we all missed it, right? But that's the issue. We are looking here at a very, very disturbed person who spent most of his life, according even to his mother, being a very disturbed person who did not receive the kind of help that he needed in order to literally just stabilize his life. And it ended up in a catastrophic event that claimed, in which he claimed his own life, allegedly. Now, there you go about how media comes with a purpose, how information has a mission. And the mission is to condition us all to absent this factor from the equation. And in a way, a very stereotypical and racist, may I add, way, is to say this young man was being governed by naturally encoded genetic impulses to being a criminal, because that's what young black men are, who are into hip-hop as he was. There could be no other possible reason for the fact that he did what he did. We are to deal with him and the circumstances he caused in a very literal sense. Even though we know the facts, even though in any other circumstance, we would be inclined to ask the question, what is the relationship between his mental illness and the deaths of two cops and the taking of his own life and the shooting of another person who allegedly was very close to him and the estrangement from his family, including from his mother? We are not supposed to link these things at all. You see? So the media's job is to now transport that information to you and me so that we can have a one-dimensional view of this entire event, and the view based on racist principles that a black person's life couldn't possibly be multidimensional. It is a one-dimensional thing. He's a criminal. End of story. Not that he's a mentally ill young man driven by forces we probably could never understand. But clearly they understand it. The young man who killed all those children in Connecticut was a complex human being. The young man who killed all those people in Colorado at the theater, a very complex human being. Mentally ill, both of them, but we understand their mental illness to be linked to mass murder because white people are very complex. Black people are one-dimensional people. So this man, Ismael Brinsley, that's what the mentality is, and that's what was communicated to us. And that's why I say you have to be very defensive about how you consume information, because information constantly, and this was the point I think many of you have made, that you have to be on guard all the time. All the time you have to be on guard, because this is how the system operates. It coaches you. It cultivates you to think one-dimensionally when it comes to people of color. And that's the story of that news conference. So Queens wins the day. Lewis and Chris together brought it home. I want to thank you so much for that today. I want you to keep in mind a wonderful, wonderful event that is slated for January the 9th, Friday, January the 9th at 7 p.m. at Convent Avenue Baptist Church. The whole community is going to come there. I hope you will be among them to say thank you, thank you, thank you, Dr. John Henrik Clark, for your life's work. Dr. Clark would have been 100 years old on January the 1st. We can't hold the event on January the 1st, so January the 9th. And we will have many speakers, wonderful, wonderful testimonials. But most importantly, it is a long overdue big hug, a big kiss, a big thank you, thank you, thank you to John Henrik Clark. I have the privilege of convening or helping to convene this community gathering. It is at Convent Avenue Baptist Church, Friday, January the 9th at 7 p.m. And we just want to have fellowship. Those of us who have been impacted by his work, those of us who have come close to ourselves through his work, please join us in this fellowship. And I have other things that I will be doing as well while I will be in New York City. On the 28th at REFAL headquarters in New Jersey, I will be there talking and commemorating with you. I will tell you more about that tomorrow because that is in line with festivities. But many things that I want to do, and chief among them, and I'm trying to organize it now, I think we need to have a major, major fundraiser for Alton Maddox. And I want to know if you will join me in that. Please go to my Facebook page and let me know if you're interested in doing that. We owe this man to get him into the courtroom again and to be once again the attorney at war in behalf of our community. So stay tuned right here at PRN.FM. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com, on Facebook, Lead Stories with Utrice Lead. Always, as always, always a great pleasure and a privilege to be in your company. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.